You're recording right now.
Okay. Good afternoon. Hi, everyone. This is Elvina Elvix. We're doing an episode of Who Asked Her, a new one after quite a long time. I think I've only done one episode this year, so I'm pretty keen to bring you guys another one. I have two really amazing guests with me today, both of whom are also very good friends of mine. Super intelligent women, and I hope we bring a really good conversation today. I have Dr. Philippa Jenkins, PhD, and I feel super smart to say that, right?
Mm.
But and I have my friend Eugenia Anang, lawyer and all-round right brain.
That's so,
and of course myself. This is a different format. I think we're just trying to have more of a chatty conversation and talk about things that we have spent or invested a little bit of time in. In the last few weeks, whether or not it was too much time, whether or not it was wise or not, I'm not sure. But here we are in my apartment in McMahon's Point, and it's been great to have my girls over, and we just wanted to have a chat. So we wanted to talk about the American elections, because I think all of us have lost hours in our lives that we won't get back, at least I have. And possibly, if time permits, we wanted to talk about a little bit of the PNG politics and all the dramas that's happening. I had to restrain myself from using the words that were at the tip of my tongue because they probably weren't acceptable. My mother would be horrified anyway if I used those words.
Can I say them?
You can say them. You can say
the fuckery that's been happening with PNG
Amen.
Politics.
Amen. So, because I got a nice talking to from my parents who swearing on the podcast.
PNG, but you're not alone with the fuckery. The United States is above you.
Well, when they were talking about election fraud, I was like, that happens in Papua New Guinea. What are we talking about here, you know? So anyway, I wanted to get both these two women's perspectives on what's happened. Particularly, I think we were all really invested in seeing Donald Trump's exit, I hope. I think we're all on the same page.
Oh, yes.
None of us are Donald Trump fans, and I think this is a safe space to have that conversation.
Yes.
Because
it's good to be a safe space.
Right, you know? Because I don't think PNG social media has been a safe space to be able to say you don't support Donald Trump, because a lot of people were coming for me when I said...
So are you saying that it's a lot of Papua New Guinea... Wait, shame on me for even asking that question, because I do know some Papua New Guineans that do support Donald Trump.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
yes.
Absolutely. I'm familiar with one
so
of them.
So would you guys say that, there's a significant majority of Papua New Guineans on social media that support Donald Trump?
There is a significant number of Papua New Guineans who support Donald Trump, but I think it's the Papua New Guinean Christian cohort.
Yeah.
The evangelical Christian cohort that support Trump.
It's such a strange sort of little group of people who the sort of people who don't normally have any interest in American politics generally.
Right. Yeah.
Like they wouldn't, if you said, like, you know, when was Bill Clinton in, and they wouldn't even know. But because Donald Trump has, it's that whole, like, say what you feel.
Absolutely. It's that cultural personality.
Thing.
Yeah.
Mm.
And
it's
I think
like they sort of treating it like, oh, this is a big man. So,
right.
You know, he's, look at how wealthy he is. I want that wealth. So.
Yes. I was living in PNG when he'd announced his intentions to run in the presidential race.
Mm.
And I remember just being gobsmacked by how people were like, yeah, as you said, people were interested in US politics. They'd never previously been interested. Mm. Or at least, I don't know, they weren't sort of raised in a household like mine where my father, you know, talks about politics a lot. But they just didn't have that awareness. But all of a sudden they loved Trump.
In that respect, right, let me just... Because prior to Trump, we had Obama,
right?
Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that during some part of Obama's term, you would have been in PNG, maybe prior to one of his election in 2012.
Yeah, 2012 was when I moved back to Papua New Guinea. So he was already in the White House. But
yeah.
I don't think Papua New Guineans were as invested in his politics. I mean, Papua New Guineans loved him because he was black.
Yes.
But then again, some Papua New Guineans loved him because he was black. Let's talk about our internal racism. That's a separate conversation. But I think when Trump came out, he was just, I guess because he's such a polarizing figure, people jumped on that bandwagon.
So basically what you're saying is you didn't see the same reaction to Trump.
As I did to Obama?
To Obama. Like with Obama, it was kind of lukewarm.
Yeah, it was lukewarm. I think there was celebration of Obama's victory amongst Papua New Guineans like myself, who had lived abroad and who understood race politics, you know, and the nuances of that, where we sort of celebrated it, you know. But and I have my views on Obama's administration in, you know, post his time in office.
Mm.
But I don't think I'd witnessed that investment by Papua New Guineans in US politics until Trump announced his candidacy.
Yeah, right.
Because even though Obama is a very Christian man, Trump, for some reason, was seen as more closer to the
very evangelical, because he stood for he didn't support gay marriage.
He's
anti-abortion, and those are the things that Papua New Guineans will.
The thing is that before he was a candidate, lukewarm on both of those things.
Right.
Okay. So
never had particularly strong.
But then he, of course, he went for the Bible Belt. He went for the Bible Belt, and he appealed to that section because they're the ones that don't believe in a woman's right to what she does with her body and her reproductive.
So from what I've been reading on Fox News commentate from Fox News commentators and just from Twitter, it seems to me that the Republican Party, the supporters of the Republican Party in the United States, have decided that Donald Trump is God's chosen one, right? He's here to drain the swamp. And I was saying to you guys earlier that I'm just baffled by that, right? Because this is a man that's been married 3 times. Right,
that's cool in Papua New Guinea, though.
But if we're going by the strict Christian doctrine, right? If we're going by Catholicism,
Catholicism,
we know that divorce is just not permitted,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's already struck out there.
Yes,
we know that he has been unfaithful to at least his current wife.
Yes,
you know, he hasn't denied his extramarital affairs with that porn star.
Yes.
So,
and his first wife, Ivana, he even brought his mistress and showed her.
See,
Aspen.
We know that he's broken at least one of the Ten Commandments, right?
Oh, of course.
Thou shalt not commit adultery. That man has broken it, he's smashed it, he's stuck it out.
Yeah.
And he still has supporters within the Christian community in Papua New Guinea.
Because I'm going to be really, really simplistic here. He's a man.
Hmm.
You know, he's a man and he's allowed to do it. So I had breakfast with my aunties today, and both of whom were previously Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah.
And they were saying that in their view, they'd seen women who had been excommunicated from the churches for engaging in extramarital affairs, but the men get a counseling session and you're okay, you know? So I think it feeds that whole PNG big man. It's that whole big man mentality. He's gone out there and he's gotten all these wives and he's done all these things where he's acquired material wealth and whatnot, and we will support him based on that.
Mm.
And we also discount the influence of missionaries in Papua New Guinea.
Yeah.
Because the majority of the American missionaries that came to Papua New Guinea were from the Bible Belt areas, the Mississippi, that sort of, you know, borderline trailer trash parts of America, who came to PNG. So obviously they're going to impart a little bit of that evangelical.
Yeah, and I think it also, there's a big influence of the sort of Hillsong stuff.
Oh, of course.
Throughout everything.
Yes.
And that's influencing Australian politics as well.
Yes.
But that sort of, you know, the Pentecostal end of things and that sort of really, like, you know, it doesn't matter what you do, it doesn't matter what you are, as long as you say the things that we like, we'll support you.
Yeah.
So you do the virtue signaling of, I'm against abortion, I'm against gays, I'm against this, I'm against that, I'm also for white supremacy. And for some reason there's this whole internalized thing in America where they're like, you know, it's kind of weird because they don't see that the white supremacy is a bad thing because they're like, but
because
hard because it's like people in, like, say Hispanics or you know, African Americans, they don't see that the things that Donald Trump says about white supremacy are actually hurting them because they're like, oh no, we're successful, so we've overcome it.
Yes.
So if we're successful, so if you look at that, so they don't see that, you know, he said things about the, you know, good people on both sides stuff. All of that. They're like,
Give a background to that in case there's some people that don't understand why that comment is so inflammatory.
Hmm.
That comment he made after a young woman had been run down by a white supremacist Trump supporter in a car. So she had
in the context of the was it Charleston, where they earlier the night before done the tiki torch.
Yes,
you know,
yeah.
The Jews will not replace us.
So earlier the night before, there'd been a whole bunch of white supremacists that had marched with Nazi slogans and Nazi signs. And so the very next day, there'd been a whole bunch of, I suppose, reasonable thinking people that had decided, look, I'm going to protest against the march that occurred the night before. And this young woman was part of the march, and she'd been run down by one of those white supremacist Trump supporters and killed.
Yeah.
And when it was time for Trump to give a
condemnation of what had happened,
address about what occurred, he basically didn't address the atrocity that had happened. And essentially, he understood and I identified that there were two sides of the argument. There was the white supremacist side and there was the anti-white supremacist side. And he basically said, yeah, I get what you were all saying, but at the end of the day,
there are good people,
on either side of the spectrum. And this is coming after a woman had been murdered by the Nazi side of the spectrum.
I also think it's because Papua New Guineans have this weird relationship with racism.
Yeah.
I don't think we understand racism and how insidious and systemic and how it has affected people of the same skin color as us around the world. Like, whenever I've had conversations with people, particularly Papua New Guinean men, who I consider to be sort of, you know, well-educated, intelligent, whatever, and I felt really stupid for having to point out the blatantly obvious to them, where I'd say, but he's incredibly racist. And you have this sort of vacant response from, or a vacuous response from a Papua New Guinean person, like, what? He's racist, you know? We don't understand the history of racism, maybe because we've never had civil war in our own country. We've never had anything of the likes of, you know, the civil rights movement and all of that sort of stuff happening in the US. So we never understood how fractious relations can be between two races, you know, and how Donald Trump's politics speaks very much to that white supremacist notion or the white supremacist notions of, you know, how race relations should go. But Papua New Guineans just never seem to get that. And I remember I said to one guy, you do realize that if you went to America now, if you tried to migrate, you'd be the sort of person he wouldn't want, you know, because you're brown or black. You're also from what he would consider a shithole country. He referred to countries like ours as shithole countries.
Mm.
But it doesn't seem to translate.
I think the easiest way to explain white supremacy to Papua New Guineans would be, think about when you go to Papindo. Is Papindo still around in PNG?
Yes.
If you go to Papindo and you're a national and you go in and you do your shopping, and when you're coming out, the security guard asks to check your bag.
But it doesn't check the white lady's bag.
And then from the corner of your eye, you see a white lady or a white guy just walk right past you and nobody stops them. That's white supremacy.
Yeah.
That's someone essentially saying that this white man is better, he's more trustworthy than you are, purely because of the color of his skin. And that's the kind of message that Donald Trump is pushing.
Yes.
He wants everyone to think that the white man is always right.
Yeah.
And everybody else is just catching up, if you will.
I think also it's a thing of, like, that whiteness is neutral. That's the other thing. That's
whiteness
the default.
Is right in Papua New Guinea.
Yeah, but, like, the default is that, you know, you say American.
Yes.
What do you think?
I think white.
Yeah. You say Australian. What do you think?
Yes.
White. The default. And then everything is an on top of that African-American. You know, Papua New Guinean Australian. Like, all
African-Australian.
Yeah.
Listen, like, I do not subscribe to that whole African-Australian thing. Let me just put that straight. If I'm going to subscribe to anything, it's going to be Ghanaian Australian because, you know.
Yes.
There are different countries in Africa.
It's
it's that whole thing of, like, the... And this is how I sort of see the white supremacy thing of, like, that everything is either, like, you know, people say that, oh, this group of people is worse because they're not to the neutral. They're not to the standard.
Yes.
Like, whiteness sets the standard.
Of course.
Yes.
And then nobody can meet that standard because it's fundamentally rooted in that whiteness.
Yeah.
So no matter what people do, they can't, meet that standard or exceed that standard.
I remember I went to have lunch at Kopitiam with one of my colleagues from Exxon, and we walked in, and I don't think he'd been there before, and he goes, oh, there are expats here. And I was like, yep, the food's palatable. I was joking, obviously, but that's that view, right, where if there's an expat eating in this place,
it must be
palatable.
Oh,
or,
my goodness.
You know, the food is, the place is relatively safe because who gives a shit what Papua New Guineans eat and where they eat.
Yeah.
But, and I think, I don't know about you guys, but I spent so much time. I lost so much sleep during the elections. I just stayed watching the whole thing.
Yeah, me too.
I was cheering for Biden the whole time. And mind you, I don't know if I'm cheering for Biden because he's a change or because he's better. But
I think most people voted because they hate Trump. I think but it was this, an okay, anti-Trump so vote.
This
it was,
also we want this dude out. This also concerned me too because the margins aren't great.
No.
You know, it was a very close race. And that tells you so much about the American psyche. What is wrong with American society? Because if Trump was that odious, which he is, one would have thought the margins would be huge.
But that's the whole thing. Yeah. You don't care what you do.
Yeah.
You care what you say.
Yeah.
And the thing is that the Coney Barrett thing.
Oh,
the
yes.
Supreme Court Justice.
Yes. Mm. Amy Coney Barrett.
That was the big tick for religious conservatives. Because
she's Catholic.
She is against abortion.
Yeah. Mm.
And half of the things in America are about abortion, restricting it and stuff like that.
I find it amazing, though, that a society as civilized as that would be so invested in what a woman does with her body. The autonomy of your body is so problematic.
What annoys me with this anti-abortion supporters, Trumpers, if you will, is that there's no conversation about what happens when a mother or a young single mother, or even an older single mother, or a wedded woman or a married woman, there's no conversation about what happens after the child is born. Because we know that their foster care system is
atrocious.
It's atrocious, right? There's so many unwanted children in America already.
Mm.
So it's thank you for loving the fetus in the womb.
Yeah.
But where is the love for the fetus after it's been born?
So
I don't think they think that far.
No. But it's also that look at the states that are restricting abortion. They're states with higher populations of African Americans and Hispanic people and Latino people. And that's like they say, well, people can just go to like California and get an abortion.
Right.
It's liberalized there.
Yeah.
But how can you afford to go from Alabama
to California?
Across the country? Mm.
So you're like, saying they want to police black and brown bodies.
Yeah.
They want that power. Yeah.
They've always wanted that power.
Yeah.
They used to have that power.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's like when you think about it in things like that, you realize,
I get really sensitive trying to raise the abortion issue in conversation in Papua New Guinea because Papua New Guineans will immediately lead to the whole.
I don't think any woman
wants to have an abortion. No.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I don't think any woman wants to do that at all. You know, I think a lot of times a lot of women feel like they have no choice.
Yes.
And that is the only choice that's available to them. And what a lot of this anti-abortion people seem to be forgetting is that even before these laws came into place, giving the woman the right to choose what she wants to do with their body, people were having abortions.
Yeah.
In countries where abortion isn't legal, women are having abortions.
Hmm.
Right?
Women are getting back out abortions women and girls are getting back out abortions in Moresby, Papua New Guinea, all over the place.
Yeah.
You know? We don't talk about that either and the risk that poses to those young women. But I was watching this girl on Twitter and she was saying, Joe Biden can't go out there and proclaim himself to be Catholic when he supports abortion. You know, he's not an actual Catholic. And I responded and I was like, I'm Catholic and I believe in a woman's right to do with her body what she pleases, you know. And we had this to and fro. But again, I see that Papua New Guineans aren't really, because we're so hyper-Christian in PNG, but no one's really focused on Joe Biden's faith. And Joe Biden's apparently like you know, he goes to mass every Sunday. In the
apparently he was really excited when he met the Pope while he was with the Obama administration.
Yeah,
the Pope and apparently he lost his mind.
Of course.
He was like, oh my God.
Yeah, but even then, if we're going to go along this religious sort of line of support for Trump, no one's highlighted the fact that...
Yeah, but he's a Catholic. Don't you understand the American were very suspicious of Catholics.
Yeah, that's true.
For a long time. There hasn't been a Catholic...
He's the second Catholic president after JFK in the entire history of the United States.
Yeah.
So he's...
Because America was founded on Protestantism.
Correct.
So, yeah. So,
that's fascinating.
And so, you know, a lot of the Catholics came and were Irish Catholics.
Mm-hmm. I will say this, though. The Catholic Church has not helped themselves in that regard, though.
No. Sis, you want to get out of my house?
No,
but,
like...
Third generation Catholic here, you know?
I hear you, Lewa, but I got to say, man, your people have not helped themselves.
No, we haven't. We own the fact that we've done some pretty fucked up shit.
You're ridding yourself of this suspicion that people have of the Catholic Church.
Of course.
But I will say that it's not just the Catholic Church. All And that was something
listen,
that
I
through.
Can't bear Anglicans, let me be 100 there. But anyway.
it's the thing of, like, even, like, so the Royal Commission into Institutional Child Abuse in Australia.
Yes.
It wasn't just the Catholic.
Oh, Anglicans were doing it too. Anglicans do all kinds of shit. Yeah.
And so it's, you know, I think the Catholic Church just, because
took the brunt of it.
But it's also because they have the one, the head.
Yes.
So they have the Pope, who's the head of the church across the whole
they
world.
They had somebody that could be held responsible that was.
Whereas these Anglican MFs, it's what, the Queen?
Yeah.
Yeah. And her Queen's household is full of, you know, pumping and all of that. So.
Lord. So, oh my God. Have any of you been watching? Have any of you watched the season 4 of The Crown?
Of course I have.
Oh my goodness.
I'm the world's biggest Diana stan.
Oh
I've
my
it.
God. Listen, I didn't really give up.
Charles and Camilla are trash.
I'm going to swear. I didn't really give 100% trash. I didn't really give a fuck about the whole Charles, Camilla, Diana thing. The
listen, having dated an old Anglican man, Charles is trash.
After I watched season 4 of The Crown, I was like, oh, fuck Charles. Oh, fuck. I was like,
he's hideous.
I was ready to bitch slap both of them.
He is hideous.
I was ready.
He's unattractive. He's emotionally unavailable. Sounds like I'm describing someone else, but he is just. And. You know, he was so in love with Camilla. Why didn't he just tell Diana at the start, forget it. Let's not do this.
But Camilla was married.
Yeah.
And his family.
She
was
they
married
were together.
Too.
And, oh, they
his
were
family
all
stopped him from marrying Camilla.
Yeah.
They basically said she
so
a whore.
They're the star-crossed lovers.
Yeah, but then Camilla goes and has lunch with Diana.
I know. I hated that
shady
scene.
Shady bitch.
I
she really
know.
Is. Oh,
she basically lets Diana know, like, I'm the one, bitch. Like, what? Who are you? I was like, listen, Diana, you need to just pick up your purse or go home and be young.
Diana was Catholic. Diana was Catholic. So see, these Anglicans, they're so untrustworthy.
Oh,
anyway,
like, we will not generalize.
Wait, no, except maybe St. Martin's. So let's talk about PNG politics before we come back to the US.
Yeah.
What the hell has gone on in the last, what is it, 2 weeks that's happened, 1 week? So I knew, I will say this. At the very start, when O'Neill was deposed and Marape was installed, I said to anyone who would listen, that man is not going to leave without a fight. Not only that, he's somewhere in his mansion in the North Shore of Sydney, licking his wounds, planning a comeback. And that's essentially what he's done. He flew back to PNG and probably, you know, took his millions with him.
I wonder if he spent the night at the Shangri-La before he left for PNG.
Because
is this a Shangri-La that he goes to? That he
yes,
that
yes,
he
in the Sydney Shangri-La.
Must have been there the night before he flew.
Yeah,
to
probably.
So stage is cool.
So they've had a well, they're coming up to the vote of no confidence. The 18-month grace period ends on the 1st of December, but Parliament was in session, so they went ahead and they in session deliberating the budget. They went ahead and they announced an adjournment in order for the because the opposition I think had gathered all these members of government to move across. They moved across, they announced that they were adjourning Parliament, and then Job Pomart, who surprisingly can read, said that you guys have breached a standing order, I think it is, and said, you know, Parliament was still in session, so he recalled Parliament to come back and deliberate on the budget. But they had all, I think, the opposition had all taken off to Vanimore, they'd gone somewhere, they'd done something.
Lolowata.
So that's, they always do that. They go and have these big camps and then they take these pictures at the end and you look at the pictures and you're like, wait, isn't that the same person that I saw 5 years ago who was like, we need to get rid of O'Neill, and he's sitting right next to O'Neill, you know? So all of that whole, were you watching it as well, Fit?
Yes.
It's so confusing and it's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
It's,
I'm tired.
It's exhausting, but it's just so
stupid.
Banal.
It is banal. It is
like,
banal.
It happens all the time.
Yes.
And it's like the vote, as you've said with the vote of no confidence thing, it's like it is the most destabilizing thing
it
in
is.
Politics.
It is.
Aside from the lack of any sort of binding ideology for the political parties.
Ever since I was a kid, you would hear the words vote of no confidence and someone, you know, there'd be some mad horse trading behind the scenes, blah, 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 and then someone would come up and say, I've got the numbers. I've got the numbers to ask the Prime Minister, and then sure enough, they've all shifted to one side. But what I thought was hilarious and what gave rise to no, like, no shortage of memes was William Dumas' statement to the Parliament, to the papers, where he said, I unconsciously moved. Were you in a coma? I unconsciously moved and then I realized what had happened and so I've come back. So he went across to the opposition.
Yeah.
And then maybe, I don't know, he found his principles, his backbone, his spine.
So they did some black magic on him.
Maybe.
That's what he's
maybe.
Saying.
But But and then
maybe
he's
he
like,
just wanted he just wanted to a trip to Parliament.
They took over his mind. His alter
mind
ego.
Control,
his
mind
alter
control.
Ego.
I just wanted a holiday.
Oh my god! And then, and mind you, he's in charge of one of the, you know, an extremely important portfolio. But then he says, "Oh, I moved unconsciously and I've come back." And every single justification that all of them have offered just sounds incredibly, I don't know, vacuous.
So what's going to happen? So my understanding is now they've approved the 2021 budget without the opposition present.
Without the opposition
and
present.
And that it's all legal, it's all kosher.
Well, I don't know how you can do that because, you know, the people, there are none of their elected representatives were in there during the passing of
I understand that's the biggest argument against it, but some people are saying, well, it doesn't matter because what you need is the majority of parliament. So whoever's present at that time and votes to pass it, that's what it is. And if that's the case, then, I mean, these people are going to have to look at their elected representatives and say, bro, you stop blow where?
I don't think anyone's going to ask that question.
Where were you?
But they don't have these sorts of conversations in Papua New Guinea because I don't think we ask enough of our elected officials. So I saw someone on Twitter saying something like, you know, the people of Hagen Central, you've got to make sure, Hagen Open, you've got to make sure you don't vote Duma back in. He's never legitimately won, you know? So don't be out here insulting the people.
Wasn't
of
the last
Hagen
time
Open.
They found like 20 boxes of votes that just tossed in a river or something?
So here you are telling the people, don't vote this man back in. Whether or not you vote him, he's still going to get in.
But even so, like, the way that they do elections in PNG, they went for the preferential thing. So if you get, like, 35 people who put themselves up for, you know, as a member of an open electorate, the person who wins actually only gets about 12 primary votes.
And I don't, like, I don't know if it's just
like
me, 2, but
2,000 for North Flyover.
I suppose this is why those of us that are hearing Trump screaming,
election fraud.
I heard this before.
You need to come to PNG to see real election fraud.
We'll show you election fraud. You know, we don't do a lot of things well, but we do that well.
We're talking about 90% of the population not voting for the candidate that wins.
He's
going to win.
He's
going to
win.
Anyway, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Right? So,
like, I think they said that his William Duma's electorate, for example, had more people voted there than the entire population of Western Highlands province. Someone was telling me that and I was like, oh my God, really? You know, but I'm not Marape's biggest fan, but I just, and he's, in my view, I think he's been a disappointment of a prime minister. I just don't see that he's done anything constructive. He's not made a single decision.
He hasn't even been in power for 18 months, Lewa.
He was also only his right-hand man for 7 years. Very much a part of that administration and that regime for a long time.
But I think for most people, it's the fact that he's not O'Neill that matters, right?
Right, yeah. Right.
Because how long was O'Neill in power for?
Oh, like 9 years? 9 years or something?
8 years?
Because he came back after 2022.
And we know that Marape has to take his instructions from O'Neill, right? He can't... When they were.
Oh, yeah.
Courts,
a lot of
right?
people have used that as an explanation and said, you know, O'Neill was dictatorial. So
he
you couldn't
didn't know anything about the UBS loan at all.
Who? Marape?
Yeah.
What UBS loan? He knew nothing.
But at least now we know, now we know that those two are no longer friends, right? So it will seem.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Because
it would seem like Marape has made a clean break from O'Neill, we should hope. That because I think much of the concern, from what I recall, when Marape came into government, much of the concern was that, oh, Lord, he's just O'Neill's puppet. Yes, he's the prime minister, but O'Neill's pulling the strings in the background, right? This is all just another ruse to fool us to think that there's been a change in government, but there hasn't really been any. It's still O'Neill that's in power. He's just got Marape, you know, as
a
puppet.
I feel, though, that Marape has contributed to just the dumbing down of conversation and the national discourse and all of that. Like, the things that he says and posts on his Facebook, I cringe. First of all, that man needs a grammar and spell check. Like, he needs a media person to do that
he
stuff for him.
Media
and for
person.
Him, he thinks, you know, this is my method of communicating with the people. I get that.
He wants to
get
be
that.
Brian Cramer 2.0. But the thing,
he's taken the
no one can be
he's
Brian Cramer.
The Trump playbook.
Yes,
getting really close with the grassroots
and tweeting and Facebook posting and all of that. But again,
but it's not working. Right?
No, it's not working because I just don't think that he has enough behind him, you know, in terms of his economical. I mean, he closed Pogara when the price of gold was at an all-time high.
Yeah.
And then he backflipped about a week or no, about a couple of months later when that happened. And then my former boss, Peter Graham, issued that scathing letter of resignation after he'd appointed him to that role to manage Porgera. And to me, I think that said a lot about what Peter Graham